Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, it's more and more entertaining clips of conservatives working themselves into an anti-contraception frenzy. To mix things up, I have author Rebecca Haynes on to talk about the evolution of the concept of girl power. Amy Poehler returned to Saturday Night Live in part to revise a popular character with Maya Rudolph, but also to unleash her fury alongside Seth Meyers about the conservative war on contraception and abortion. It was, needless to say, awesome. Here's a sample.
The Virginia House of Representatives this week passed a bill that required women to have a transvaginal ultrasound before having an abortion. Really? Now, don't get me wrong. I love transvaginal. It's my favorite airline. I got so many miles on transvaginal that I always get upgraded to lady business.
But Virginia wasn't done. They also passed a bill saying life begins at conception. What's next? Life begins at last call? Life begins when you click send on your Match.com profile?
Really? Mike Huckabee joined the fight against President Obama's mandate saying, we're all Catholic now. Really? You know who is not all Catholic now? All Catholics now. 98% of Catholic women say they've used birth control, and the other 2% are always the ones trying to get a church to start a softball team.
I really, really liked the way Poehler ended this segment.
Don't tell me what to do!
Hey, I think that may have to live on beyond this podcast in some form. I'll be hanging on to it. Last week, I covered the increasingly hostile rhetoric from the right to women having sex at all, and certainly any kind of health care that makes it safer and easier and more pleasurable for women. Well, that week had nothing on where it all went. I actually predicted on Twitter that by Wednesday the 15th, some conservative on cable news would drop the shut your legs slut type line. I was off by a day. It took until Thursday the 16th before it happened.
This contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive. You know, back in my days, they used bare aspirin for contraceptives. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly.
That was Foster Freeze, who is the biggest donor to Rick Santorum's Super PAC and a billionaire. Freeze married in 1962, and while he has a slightly higher than average 4 children, it's still a much lower number than could be expected if he actually had lived the anti-contraception values he's promoting. But as I noted before, some of these old dudes have so much privilege that it probably never occurred to them to even ask how their wives avoid unwanted pregnancy. They probably just think the contraception fairies take care of that, in the same way the toilet fairies make sure the toilet is clean. Freeze apologized in the usual disingenuous manner, and then Santorum did a little damage control, which is interesting. I wish I could show you the video, because the amount of grinning Santorum did during this interview was genuinely unnerving. It didn't cover up his anger and nervousness very well.
Well, you know, this is someone who's a supporter of mine, and I'm not responsible for every comment that a supporter of mine makes. I mean, there are lots of folks who, I mean, they say it was a bad joke, it was a stupid joke. It's not reflective of me or my record on this issue. You know, it's funny that I've been criticized by Governor Romney and by Ron Paul for actually having voted for something called Title 10. Which is actually federal funding of contraception.
He did, in fact, do that. Back before the Republican Party decided en masse that they object to contraception subsidies and threatened to shut down the government over it. Yes, folks, the belief that contraception is so evil that the federal government should be shut down rather than continue subsidizing it was something that Republicans just started to believe. Until last year, contraception subsidies weren't controversial at all in the mainstream Republican Party. Something to think about. Someone needs to ask the Susan B. Anthony list about this, since they made a commitment defunding Title 10 as part of the pledge they required Santorum to sign to get their endorsement. I think conservatives are beginning to realize this is a losing issue for them, which is why Santorum bared his teeth and forced himself to pretend he's not as extreme on this as he is. But unfortunately, the stampede mentality of conservatives means that while they are easy to turn in any direction that you want, once they're unleashed in a direction you don't want, it's really hard to get them in line. For instance, Dana Loesch went off message when defending a Virginia bill requiring women to get transvaginal ultrasounds if they want to get an abortion.
There were individuals saying, well, what about the Virginia rape? The forced rapes of women who are pregnant. What? Wait a minute. They had no problem having similar to a transvaginal procedure when they engaged in the act that resulted in their pregnancy.
That's about as blatant as it gets. Loesch is saying that if you have sex once, you forsake your right to ever say no to vaginal penetration ever again. Defense attorneys for rapists are probably begging her to sit on juries after this. But it was a refreshing break from the anti-choicers claiming that they want to assault unwilling women with unnecessary ultrasounds for their own good. Loesch is clear that this is punishment for having sex. But we knew that all along. And I just have to include this clip of yet another conservative calling contraception abortion, this time Mitch Daniels.
And this isn't about birth control or contraception or morning after abortion. This is about the trampling of freedom in this country.
There is no such thing as morning after abortion. Since the morning after you have sex at night, you cannot be pregnant. It's biologically impossible. If you show up at the abortion clinic, they'll laugh and say, wait until you're actually pregnant, hun. Sperm are really tiny. It takes them a while to get up in there. What he's obviously trying to do is characterize emergency contraception as abortion. In other words, they're saying pregnancy begins at ejaculation, putting the day life begins days before the sperm meets the egg. Maybe Amy and Seth are right, and next they'll be saying life begins at the first date. After the interview, I'll have some clips of conservatives getting even more outrageous and hysterical over the fact that women use their reproductive rights, and the Obama administration supports their right to do so. I'd like to welcome Rebecca Haynes to the program. Rebecca is an assistant professor of communications at Salem State University in Massachusetts. She's also the author of a new book titled Growing Up with Girl Power: Girlhood on Screen and in Everyday Life. Welcome to RealityCast, Rebecca.
Thanks so much.
Girl power is a phrase with a strange history behind it. Can you run down how it's evolved through its various incarnations?
Sure. The history, as I understand it, is that it really started out as a subcultural rallying cry with the Riot Girls, which was a sort of countercultural punk rock-oriented movement. And it was really meant to convey the idea that girls could do it themselves, that they were not necessarily needing to be part of the mainstream. They didn't need to buy into consumer culture. But then somehow it got a bit inverted as pop groups like the Spice Girls in particular said, that sounds like a phrase we could use. And it turned into a really commercially oriented phrase that encouraged girls to purchase commodities and engage with media culture as a route to empowerment.
And, you know, I think people who analyze this evolution, you know, have mixed feelings about it, that it wasn't an entirely bad change. How do you feel about it?
You know, I think it is unfortunate every time something that really, you know, has a strong message behind it gets sort of co-opted and watered down. On the other hand, I do think it's amazing that we had a few years there where young girls were receiving, you know, messages in the media that were feminist in orientation. Even if it was more watered down, they were still getting the idea that there's something more for girls than the sort of stereotypical stuff.
Yeah, and obviously Riot Girl is just not going to reach your average 10-year-old.
No, I mean, definitely not. Their content was not age appropriate for the group of kids that the Spice Girls was really focused on. So, you know, in that regard, you can say, you know, it kind of makes sense.
So girl power is something that, like, went from the Spice Girls to just, I think, becoming the utter mainstream in children's entertainment. And you, in your book, you have a chapter about the rise of the girl hero in pop culture. Can you talk mm-hmm. about this girl hero and how she differs from other maybe previous girl characters?
Sure. You know, I thought it was really fascinating that as girl power started circulating in music and got so popular that it became a catchphrase, that media, including children's television programs, started emphasizing the idea of girls as heroes as a route to power. So we had the Powerpuff Girls and Kim Possible and Totally Spies and Atomic Betty and My Life as a Teenage Robot and Witch. And all of these shows featured girls who literally were the most powerful people in their universes. So it was just this literal physical manifestation of girl power.
And I think this is kind of interesting because I think a lot of us who read about girl culture mostly hear about the princess thing. How do these kind of work together?
Well, I think that the princess thing has really risen up in the aftermath of girl power kind of receding. But I do see girl power as influencing the more recent princess stuff. So, for example, when I saw Tangled, I thought, wow, Rapunzel has a lot of girl power. I think that you can't create media for girls anymore and get a free pass unless you include at least some elements of the idea of girls having agency and control over their own lives and destinies. You know, Rapunzel isn't just rescued from a tower. She says, you will take me from this tower. It's very different.
You did a lot of research with actual girls about girl power. Mm-hmm. How do girls feel about these new images of girls? I mean, they don't have like much to compare them to, but you know, it's still a big change.
Yeah, you know, the young girls that I spoke with, they were like 8 to 11 years old, and they really believed the rhetoric. They absolutely said, girls are strong. Girls can do anything. Girls are just as good as boys. Or in some cases, girls are better than boys. You know, they were very passionate about this. What was sad from my perspective is that when it came to the actual lived experiences of those girls, I'm not sure that I saw many ways in which the rhetoric helped them on a day-to-day basis. Like they were still facing, I mean, even at 8, 9, 10 years old, forms of, like, sexual harassment on the playground from other boys, or still just had incredibly sensitive concerns about their bodies, and they weren't even in adolescence yet. So the rhetoric was there, and they had this wonderful idea that girls have strength and power and agency. But I think the broader culture makes it hard for them to act on that belief because I don't think that the broader culture has quite caught up.
On the body image thing, it's interesting to me because I don't think that this girl power pop culture is helping them out much at all. It seems that little girls in pop culture are often being, especially in animation, being drawn as if they were womanly.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most problematic aspects of girl power being presented as something new, that although the conversations and the storylines may be different than previous storylines, the physical images we're seeing on screen are the same exact things as we've been seeing for years. And so it doesn't really counter the idea that girls need to look a certain way to be socially accepted.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like the Dora the Explorer change, where she went from being kind of a chubby little 5-year-old to looking more like a post-pubescent 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm. And at about the same time they did that, Cartoon Network had a very short-lived experiment where they did the same thing with the Powerpuff Girls. And if you went on their website, there was a whole Flash animated section on the Powerpuff Girls as like teenagers. And it was just like with Dora. It was so problematic. I mean, there were questionnaires for girls with things like, you know, what do you eat for a healthy breakfast? And none of the things that I saw listed looked like a healthy, complete breakfast to me. Like, it was very much taking these nice little round girl characters and sort of stretching them out and elongating them to look like the taller, skinnier, curvier stereotypes that we see for kids.
And does this have an
does that impact how girls think that their power in the world should look?
Well, I think the idea that you have to look a certain way before your voice will be heard is a message that's received loud and clear by kids today. And I think we're seeing a lot of age compression. We're seeing younger and younger girls worrying about, well, am I pretty enough or am I skinny enough? I mean, I've heard from early childhood educators who are saying they're hearing questions like these from girls at 3 or 4 now, which to me is horrifying. That is so young.
It's interesting to me because I think for adult women, we think of like this pressure in real sexualized terms, like, you know, are we acceptable to the male gaze? But obviously, little girls don't seem to care that much about that, do they?
No, and in fact, I think as far as like the princess stuff goes that you mentioned earlier, from what I've seen, most little girls who are into like the Disney princess stuff, they could care less about the romance narrative part of it. They don't want the boy. They want the sparkly dresses and they want, you know, the exciting adventures.
So I think we can probably end this with sort of a like summation. Like what would you really want to see pop culture for girls look like?
You know, I really want to see shows that have true diversity, that are more racially diverse, that have a wider range of body types. I know there's commercial imperative and that there are concerns that a show that might look that way would be a tougher sell, like it would be harder to get it green-lighted. But, you know, there's got to be a way to do it. In the end, one of my takeaways was, you know, I really think the people who did girl power hero cartoons, they had an educational mission in mind, but don't seem to have consulted with education specialists like the programs for preschoolers do. I would like to see them reach out more and say, hey, you know, if we have an educational mission at some level, let's get someone who's really an expert in that area to weigh in and find ways of being more inclusive of all girls, not just the girls who are, you know, conventionally pretty.
My guest today has been Rebecca Haynes. Her book is titled Growing Up with Girl Power, Girlhood on Screen and in Everyday Life. To find out more, go to growingupwithgirlpower.com. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Rebecca.
Thanks so much, Ned. I really enjoyed this.
Last segment, you got to hear some over-the-top hysteria from the right, but that has nothing on this segment. This is where the paranoia goes to the next level, where right-wingers imagine they're suffering at the hands of orgiastic feminist conspiracy to kidnap all men and force them into sex slavery. Okay, well, they haven't said that yet. But the conspiracy theories are getting surprisingly close. For instance, American Life League put out a video accusing Planned Parenthood of, well, it's an interesting conspiracy theory.
Just as the goal of a drug dealer is to make drug addicts, Planned Parenthood's goal is to make sex addicts, and they follow the same business model. For instance, Planned Parenthood's gateway drug is masturbation. One of its primary resources for 10-year-olds is a book called It's Perfectly Normal, and it sells masturbation to kids with graphic images of naked boys and girls masturbating, men and women having sex.
The book, by the way, is a standard sex education children's book, the kind parents have bought kids who have questions since roughly forever. I suppose American Life League believes that if your kid has questions about where babies come from or what sex is, you should slap them and send them to their room. Knowledge is naughty. If you think I'm exaggerating about their stance, I have to say I really am not. For one thing, the announcer says kids start puberty when they start high school. Actually, it's many years before, and puberty is actually complete in most teens by the beginning of high school. They also argue that kids would have no interest in sex if Planned Parenthood didn't tell them about it. But they're not only completely wrong on the facts, but they also have a really elaborate conspiracy theory.
This is what Planned Parenthood is all about. Get the kids addicted to sex so it can sell them birth control. When teens catch a sexually transmitted disease, it sells them testing services. And when a young girl gets pregnant, it sells her an abortion. This isn't education, it's indoctrination intended to drum up Planned Parenthood's abortion business.
Of course, Planned Parenthood is not a business, but a nonprofit, which is just the least of the concerns when considering the relationship of this video to reality. These are the sort of people that have hijacked the national discourse for 2 weeks, screaming about how Obama is somehow violating religious liberty by allowing women to access contraception coverage through their employers. This is how they frame contraception, as propaganda tricking people who otherwise wouldn't be interested in sex into having it. Why they have a seat at the table is beyond me. American Life League is always paranoid, but their kind of paranoia became the norm amongst right-wing pundits in the past month. Rush Limbaugh, well-known fan of repeated marriage, Viagra, and trips to countries known for sex tourism, repeated American Life League's claims.
Planned Parenthood must have sex going on, as much as possible, and particularly among the youths of America. Go to the Planned Parenthood website. Check out all of the instructional materials there. For anybody, if you printed a page from the Planned Parenthood website and went to a park and found a bunch of kids 10 and 12 years old or 14 years old playing on a seesaw and showed them that page, you'd end up in jail. Planned Parenthood pushes sex. They push pornography. They instruct about it.
You should listen to this video and the American Life League one together. They're nearly word for word in their argument. Again, the problem here is that Planned Parenthood is a non-profit, and overall, contraception saves money. So claims that liberals support sexual health rights for nefarious reasons tend to fall flat, and conservatives are starting to get creative in their elaborate conspiracy theories about why liberals support reproductive rights.
I think that's just fundamentally wrong.
But the thing is, Bob is hitting on something where the left is making this about availability to the poor.
Right.
It's more about getting rid of the poor.
Yeah.
It's what?
It's more about getting rid of the poor.
He said it. Did you really just say that?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually.
Of course, it's clear from Greg Gutfeld's claims that what's really going on is the right doesn't want the poor to have the option to get out of poverty. If you can't control your family size, controlling other things, like your education or employment opportunities, is really out of the question. And that's what a lot of this is about. One more clip to show how out of control this is all getting.
They can do this even outside of Obamacare, but within Obamacare, they can mandate anything. Once it is declared constitutional, as the secretary shall determine, is in the bill throughout the 2,700 pages. And so if they decide that you can only have two babies, they can do that.
Needless to say, there is no power granted to the executive to force people to stop at two children. More importantly, this is a fundamental misreading of the pro-choice position. We oppose this kind of state control over reproduction, and instead demand the state work with women to give us as many options as possible. Which the birth control mandate does, by making sure a woman's choice to get pregnant or not isn't determined by her ability to pay.
When I get down, you know I get down. When I get around, you know I get around.
And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, the kicker edition. Like last episode, and for all I know, next episode, the two new segments have been devoted to collecting right-wing weirdness. So I almost feel like this is just, I don't know, the whipped cream on top of a poo sundae? A lot of people have noted that it's not just the teenage sluts of right-wing dreams that use contraception, but married people and mothers too. But Rush Limbaugh has an answer for that.
So they have to gin something up, and they have done it here. And so now they're going to drum up this birth control moms? Isn't that kind of contradictory? A birth control mom? How do you become a mom if you're into birth control?
He admits that some women use contraception after having babies, but continues to believe that otherwise there's two groups of women, those who are into birth control as if it were a sexual kink, and those who have kids. In reality, most women who want to be mothers one day use birth control so they can have kids when they want to. The average woman who has two kids will use birth control for about 30 years of her life. That's an experience Limbaugh just denies outright and assumes will have no impact on the election.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in your sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.